When I say Satan, what does that make you think?
Pretty much the devil.
When someone says Satan, I think of the personal challenges, temptations, and evil desires inside each of us.
When you say Satan, it makes me think of a pointy, tailed, and horned little red creature hopping around angrily.
Do you think that Satan is like one being or kind of an idea or what?
I understand Satan as more of a force, an entity, rather than something that's like an objectable being.
But he, to be honest, he's pretty of an idea to me, because people don't really know like what's down there. Like some people say, oh, there's a heaven, there's a hell. When you go to hell, Satan's gonna be there. To me, he's an imagination. That's what people just think.
I don't think of Satan as a specific being, but rather as a divergence from the most perfect or ideal reality.
Two of the Prince of Darkness. Hey guys, just really glad you could join me today. I was just working on some of my vocals. Thinking about creating a new band. Squid in the Well is fine, but I was thinking about doing a new band that maybe is more in the like maybe metal or like hair metal genre, so that I can start expressing some of the things we're talking about on the podcast in some lyrical prose that blows some people's minds. So
the visual I had for everything that just happened was, you know, like the old shows where you kind of like the Bob Ross type feel or Mr. Rogers or whatever. I imagine like a garage door opens and there's David sitting there in sparkly pants with like a sequin scarf and no shirt and huge hair, just with the guitar, just jamming. It's not hooked to an amp. It's an electric guitar, just strumming it and just going at it. And then he just notices the camera and is like, oh, hey guys. And it's the entrance to a really weird show where David has a hair metal children's show, I guess.
What our listeners don't know is I'm wearing those sparkly pants right now as we record, just for inspiration today. And it's nice. It's real nice.
Few things are more inspired than sequins.
Yes, true that. So folks, welcome to Everything is Okay. Glad you're back for our part two today. Pretty excited. Before we jump into that, we survived our almost tornado on Saturday. We were supposed to record a couple days back, and we had to skip out on it because we thought we were going to have another Hattiesburg tornado, which is surprising how many tornadoes we get, but it feels like more than we should.
We've had more tornadoes go through the town that we're in than in all the years we lived in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that's messed up, man. It's not supposed to be like that.
Because in Oklahoma, like all the tornadoes would go around Claremore. But here, if there's a tornado, it will hit Hattiesburg.
Yep, it's coming for us. It is coming for us.
So a couple weekends ago, we went to Gulf something, one of the Gulf places. I don't remember which one it was. That one. And we found out for sure that when it comes to basically any guessing games, charades, Pictionary, any of those type things, if David is acting or doing an impression or drawing whatever, no matter what he does, I can guess what it is.
It was pretty weird. Good at it, yeah. It was... I'd have to do impressions, and some of them were okay, but some of them were not, and James killed it
like my
every
first
time.
Guesses. Somehow, yeah. I can get it.
Add that to that list of strange talents that James has. It just infuriates me at how good you are.
That's one of them, man. He's been around me long enough to know like the words that I'm trying to get out, because I often struggle with that. He'll just, he knows it, man. He just...
Like, he, he gave a clue of Jim Kelly, and I had no idea who that was. But I was like, but David used to be a big fan of the Bills, and so got it off of that clue. Just that's what it made me
know,
think of.
Yeah, he didn't know he was the QB.
How would you know?
Yeah, he didn't know he was the quarterback from the 90s, where the Bills go to the Super Bowl four times and lose four times in a row. Yeah. But he gets
no,
it, man.
No idea about that.
He got it.
See, this
I
is
know
what
my random
me.
David hit
you
trivia.
Just, yeah, you know that crap. I was sitting here going, since when has he been a Bills fan?
See, I was a Bill. I see, I was a Bills fan like early on, like real early.
Yeah, that real young.
Yeah, and that was mainly because my dad was a huge Cowboys fan, and I had to be, of course, antagonistic and pick like their arch enemy from the early 90s. So, which really right. it would have
that
been the
sense.
Eagles, but apparently I didn't understand that. I don't think, but. It was mainly I think I actually just
no,
really
the,
at liked...
that point the Bills and Cowboys because I looked it up afterwards the Bills and Cowboys were kind of the
they
rivalry
because
it wasn't that
rivalry.
Who they lost to in the Super Bowl
yeah not all four times but I think three times if I'm remembering correctly. Go ahead and hit us up on Twitter if I'm wrong, it's fine. So switching gears real quick before we jump into our topic, I watched this special on HBO that I feel like our listeners would probably freaking love. And Brad, if you get a chance while in the hotel to watch it, you should. There was a special on Andre the Giant.
Oh,
wonderful. Oh,
it was
that.
So good. I love that they spent almost 10 minutes talking about how intense his farts were. Like, this was such an incredible special. Like, it was amazing. The fact
I mean, that just
that
shows that everything about him was legendary.
Yes. And at one point he consumed, I think in a night, they said something like, I don't remember the number, but it was well over 140 beers like in one night. It may have been closer to 200.
It probably wasn't that drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. He said it took him so, he had to drink so much in order to fill anything because the guy was 500 pounds.
Right. People should look up pounds. The picture of, who was it? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think it was, and Andre the Giant with Arnold Schwarzenegger between them, and he looks tiny because they're both like a foot and a half, 2 feet taller than him, and just like twice as thick. He just looks tiny, and it shows them picking him up like he's just a toy.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't have a context really for how big that guy really was.
Oh, he's enormous. And then special, I really love the special specifically because it hits on really the history of basically pro wrestling and what happened with that, which I didn't know a lot about that growing up. I didn't really get into it. Like, I remember vaguely liking Hulk Hogan, and then they kind of talk about what happened with Hulk Hogan and that, like, that last fight between Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan, which launched the entire movement of pro wrestling on the national stage in a way that they had never seen before, which I thought was awesome. I remember, I hope Drew Cummings listens to this podcast. He's a bud of ours, but I remember Drew being way into wrestling when we were growing up, and I don't know if he was an Andre the Giant fan at one point, but I could see him loving him.
I think everybody
was awesome.
Everybody should have been an Andre the Giant fan.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the video of when basically Ric Flair's last wrestling match, have you seen the video of that? And he's fighting, I think he's fighting Shawn Michaels, which is just another wrestler guy. And it's Shawn Michaels is standing in the corner and he's like crying because he realizes that he's about to like end Ric Flair's career. Like, he's about to beat him in this match and it's going to be his final match and that's going to be the thing. And he's like crying and he looks at him as, you know, Ric Flair's like staggering up, you know, doing the whole thing. And as he's staggering up and he looks at him and he mouths to him, "I'm sorry, I love you." And then he goes and like kicks him in the jaw.
That's what I say right before I kick anyone in the jaw. It's just, it's a personal rule that I have.
Yeah.
I hate that. Declare I
your
that
love.
Personally, yeah. The first time you did that to me, it was traumatic. Yeah, sorry, Brad, go on.
No, it's good. So then he does that. And then, you know, he pins him or whatever. And then he, like, kisses him on the forehead and immediately leaves to let him have his, like,
last
moment.
Minutes.
It's actually kind of touching, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Because Ric Flair was old, man. He had been around for forever.
Right. And the thing with Andre the Giant was that because of his condition, he was dying.
Right.
Which is wild. Another thing I didn't know at that time.
Yeah, and you don't live long with giantism.
Yeah, when he lost to Hulk Hogan, he went into a deep, deep depression. Not because he lost, but because, like Brad, like you were talking about, like his career was over, and he knew that. And it was intentional, but losing that part of his identity was devastating, because that's uh-huh. what he had. I mean, they talked about how he couldn't go anywhere in the United States without people staring and mocking him. This is before he was super famous, but like people were weirded out by the size of this human. It's crazy.
How big was he? Because I don't really know.
I know he was over 500 pounds. I think he was 7'3", I believe.
I'll get the measurements
up. Yeah, get the measurements up. But enormous. He was very wide, huge neck. His hands were ginormous. There's pictures of him holding beer, and it looks like it's a toy beer. Like, it looks like it's something that you would have, like, in a kid's kitchen set that you would get, like, a little bitty can.
He was 7'4". And 520 pounds.
520 pounds. Holy shit.
And apparently he left home when he was 14 and went back to visit his parents when he was 19. And he had grown so fast they didn't recognize him.
Holy smokes, man. Well, wow. That's the episode today. Thank you guys so much for listening.
I looked up the random facts about him. One of them is he enjoyed moving cars as a prank. he would just push your car as a prank. That's amazing.
That is awesome. That is incredible. My goodness.
I mean, I do too.
He would just spin people's cars around in parking places so they'd come out and they would turn the other direction just for fun.
That is incredible.
Okay, last one. His fingers were big enough that the rings that he would wear could fit a silver dollar through them.
Holy smokes.
Holy crap.
That's it. That's our fun facts about Andre the Giant for y'all today. Hope you enjoyed it.
Segway.
All right. So if you didn't notice on the title, this is part two of our series on Satan, the Angel of Light. Also, the Angel of Darkness. Or the Lord of Darkness, or whatever you want to call him. But if you haven't listened to the first one, pause it. Go listen to the first one because it's a great just intro into him. We talk a lot about the beginning history. We talk about how the word Satan shows up in the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament about 10 times. We talked about how there wasn't really a clear picture of what Satan was. Or who he was in the actual scriptures that we have in the Bible. But they looked to a couple books that were part of Jewish lore, one of them being the Book of Enoch, the second Book of Enoch, and then Life of Adam and Eve to kind of get a picture of who this Lucifer Satan character was. And then, yeah, we talked a little bit more about his presence in the Old Testament and then briefly into the New Testament. And we're going to jump on to kind of that New Testament conversation today a little bit more of that's really when the concept of Satan, I think, started to really take shape and form. We talked about the temptation of Christ and kind of stopped there. So guys, you ready to jump back into this?
Nah.
I'm ready. I've been looking forward to this.
James is out. He's just bored. He's like, nah.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask, what?
Yeah, you're like, not really into Satan. James made it very clear in our previous episode that if he was supposed to be scared of something or people in authority told him he was supposed to be scared of it, he really wasn't going to be scared of it. So Satan, sorry, man, you fell in that category with James.
Sorry, bro.
What? What? You aren't scared of me? Was that a pretty good? Was that a pretty good voice, guys?
I mean, if he was constipated,
sounded a little. Yeah, he sounded a little whiny.
Oh, I need some prunes.
Satan's a little stopped up.
Why can't I pass this? There, no. I can pass everybody but this.
Yeah, so let's jump into it.
On that note.
I really
was that somebody
do...
was that somebody playing a guitar and then falling down the stairs?
Yeah.
But only a few steps. It wasn't a full flight.
Satan.
That's that was my last chance, guys. I wanted to breathe. My throat hurts now too. I guess I didn't do enough vocal warm up before we started this episode. It's now burning. I'm feeling the burning inside of my throat.
You went for the falsetto too much.
Yeah, too much. All right, so we're going to dive back into, we're still talking about kind of the early history of Satan, but we're going to talk a little bit about the New Testament. We talked about the temptation of Christ, which is interesting. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, if y'all want to go back and read it or check it out. But that was the first really clear picture or story in the New Testament about Satan. He's represented in some of the parables for sure, and more representative is really demons being cast out of different people. Like that, I feel like that was ever present in the Gospels. And also, I found it interesting that it seemed like Jesus was well aware of this Satan character. Like, I know we talked at the end how y'all were like, I don't know if he existed or if it was maybe a figment of him being in the desert for 40 days and hallucinating or giving a name to his human desires of like the temptation of having the power of God, but also being fully human. But I don't know. It's in some of the part, I mean, in some of the stories, it's obviously parables. So you're like, is it supposed to be taken literally or not? Like, is there a literal component to it? What do you guys think? Bring it, James, bring it, Brad. I just feel like, I'm going to let you think. I feel like Jesus definitely saw this spiritual warfare, demons, Satan, as something literal. Yeah. And yeah. I don't know.
I really, to be completely honest with you, I really don't know what to think about the demon aspect.
Yeah.
The casting out demons and that type of thing, the man who was, you know, possessed and then, you know, he told him to get out of him and he left or whatever. Like, I don't really know what to think of that particular aspect. Just in that I haven't really researched it
sure.
A lot. And I haven't, you know, so I'm kind of going to plead the fifth, I guess, on that one, because I don't really know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with this whole topic of Jesus and was he talking to a literal Satan character? I think this is going to be completely uninformative, but I mean, I think that I'm going to have to be okay with saying I just don't know. I don't really know if he did or not. I haven't really got that far in my study, so.
Right. I feel like there's just a lot of heavy implications of there being a Satan character on kind of God's design of everything. It just seems interesting in that. But, I mean, Peter was called Satan. Jesus called Peter Satan.
Right.
And so was he meaning you were possessed by this head demon Satan? And if so, why would he not cast Satan out of Peter?
Sure. And I definitely, I mean, in that passage, I almost seen it more of him saying, like, get out of here, you temptus, or you adversary, or you person that's coming at me to stop me from doing what I'm doing.
Right. So why don't we see that the same way any other time? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why does that get to be a specific person outside of that moment?
What could be the adversary or temptus avenue to, say, Jesus casting a demon out of that guy, wherever that is? I don't know where that is, but I guess that's why I'm so, like, plead the fifth, because I don't know that with the Peter passage you can see the Temptus, the adversary, but I can't necessarily see that in that story. So I'm kind of curious, where do y'all...
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know, because the way of viewing medicine and mental health and all that kind of stuff was very different at the time. And so, you know, I've heard the claims that a lot of it was him curing the demons of, like, mental illness.
Right.
And different people. But it's...
I mean, I guess it's all speculative.
It is.
Nobody was there. Yeah.
All right. So let's put the pause button on that. And I think that may come up a little bit more. But let's jump in. This next section, let's look a little bit at Satan in the early modern period. So... in the Bible, in the New Testament, I mean, he's called the liar, called the father of lies. But we talked a little bit about this in the first episode, is that we didn't really, there's no descriptors of his appearance or what's going on with that. He's called the dragon in Revelation, or the assumption is that is the Satan character in Revelation. So does he look like a dragon? That'd be kind of epic, but I don't think so. It started to show up. His appearance, or descriptors of his appearance, started to show up in the early kind of Christian art, specifically in the medieval period. What's interesting, though, is that his appearance was connected to other gods that I'm sure our listeners are familiar with, or have at least heard of, like Poseidon or Pan. You see the horns, right? Like, you see the cloven hooves, super hairy legs, like James kind of dresses up sometimes on the weekends with his kind of hairy ensemble, which I'm a huge fan of personally.
Guilty.
Yeah. And that's your connection to Pan, right? Like, that's not you being Satan. That's you being, dude, you're kind of like Peter Pan, but the hairy Pan.
I don't want to grow up.
No, you don't. None of us do. So medieval art was a huge part of really this picture of Satan. And if you want to Google, have fun with this, pictures of Satan, you'll see a lot of that ancient artwork, and some of it is freaking awesome. I highly recommend
it gets weird.
Intense quick. And actually, I heard this on another podcast, but the first pictures of Satan, either associated with the church or not, I think it was associated with the church, had him as more of this like buffoon, cartoonish type character who had a giant penis, like straight up, like that was part of that artwork back then. Like, a thing that would be super offensive would be to put basically a giant phallic object on some sort of goofy looking creature. And that was mainly to mock Satan and the devil. So that's a fun fact.
That's interesting, because you see a lot of ancient art from Egypt and all of that, and the giant penis is like for virality and masculinity, and like, so it's interesting that it's also used to mock a creature as well.
Like, if you look at common Greek artwork or sculptures and stuff like that, you would rarely, if ever, see a erected penis. Like, it's going to be, if they're naked, it's kind of just
flaccid.
Yeah, it's flaccid basically. And the reason for that is that shows self-control and really showed kind of a sophistication, where artwork that's overly sexualized was just like, oh, that's what the common folk are into. Look at that non-educated man with his giant wiener. Like, that sort of thing is going on. So
We should move from, like, that, because there's way too many jokes I'm wanting to make.
Like Rasputin, right? Rasputin with his giant unit. Okay.
Yeah, apparently, but yeah, it seems like during the medieval times, he was just not much of a character. Like, they would use him in plays to kind of show a physical manifestation of things trying to go against, like, God's plan in plays. So he was kind of a manifestation of mischief,
right,
is what it kind of, the feel that I've gotten from the stuff I've looked at. Like, they would apparently have him like being Andre the Giant and farting in the background. like that kind of thing. Like they did fart jokes, man, and stuff with him. So he's
a mocker.
He wasn't some big scary seen as like a viable opponent for God, nor something that you could ever possibly think that people could blame anything bad that they do on, like him manipulating or controlling things, because we seem to give him so much power now. Like, the devil made me do it, Satan made me do it. Like, you could just see like Satan in his eyes kind of thing when people do crazy stuff. But like, why are we giving credit to something that we're claiming is a being? And it doesn't seem to make sense. But if it's a more mindset, or if it's people when they're acting contrary to God's will or being the Satan kind of thing, that just seems to make so much more sense.
Well, that was going to be kind of my question to both of you, was what it seems like in the Old Testament was less about spiritual warfare and more about, if we lose, God's mad at us or God's against us. And then I wonder, my question is to either one of you, is, was there a point where that shifted to, well, we got to explain why we're doing these things, so it can't be me acting up, it can't be my nature, so I gotta be tempted by something,
right? Caving to temptation.
Right. Yeah. I'm just kind of curious, do y'all know when that might have gotten started? Was that always present and I'm missing it? Like, what do you guys think?
Well, I think I won't be able to specifically point to the passages in the New Testament, but a lot of, I'm sure it was some of Paul's writing, maybe some of John's writing, they started to paint a clearer picture of the Satan deity that was tempting people, that was the antithesis of what Jesus stood for. And I think he started to take shape, where he was the father of lies, right? The father of lies is just around the corner, that's trying to pull you in to the things of this world that normal people crave. And we, as followers of Christ, as these early Christians, are supposed to neglect. We're supposed to love our enemies, right? We're supposed to give up our worldly possessions in order to help our brothers and sisters. All these concepts in the New Testament, and James, you've talked about this a ton, but were so contrary. You know, they were so contrarian to the common wants, needs, and thoughts of that time. And also, I think it transfers today as well. It's still extremely, it doesn't make sense, right? Like, it's, so if you're falling into the temptations of money and power and sex and all of that, then you're falling to the whims of Satan, or you're falling to the whims of the evil one that is the Lord of darkness and also in control of the earth. When you look at the presence of Satan in the New Testament, I think that may answer some of those questions for you, Brad. I don't think it happened in the Old Testament. I think it happened after Jesus was on this earth, then left, and then the church was starting to make its way into the world. Fast forwarding past like early Catholicism, past medieval period, into the New World, Puritans, oh my gosh, they truly started to make Satan real in the New World. For sure, they believed Native Americans worship Satan, right? Like, Native Americans had their own set of beliefs, but they were like, Satan worshipers, okay? When you think about this, the power divide between these people that have come over to this land, that want to take over this land, and the indigenous people, you're going to be looking for anything and everything that you can point to show that, like, this is your right to be here, that your God is backing you up and supporting you in what you're doing. And if you see these native primitive tribes, as you see them, who don't understand medicine in the way that you do, don't understand like modern technology in the way that you do, when it was at that time, it's not, you know what I mean? These are all pictures for you to be like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and either convert you to Christianity or we're going to kill every one of you and it's going to be okay. And by the way, you're Satan worshipers, so we're actually doing the children of God a favor at this point.
Right. God wants this.
Yeah, God wants us to take over this land.
Yeah, it's the things being God ordained, which is very, very dangerous when we read into some of those things, like the idea of people that belong to Satan and Satan being the enemy of God. And of course, we're supposed to fight and kill the enemy of God. Like that kind of stepping mindset and the logic of, well, if this is the way it is, then this must be the result of that. And that's sent us down some dark passes in the history of Christianity especially, but really the history of the world.
This last section we're going to jump into, and I'm jumping a little bit quick into it. I just wanted to point out the Puritans, like obviously Puritans have been represented in literature, in movies, etc. I mean, we learned about them in high school. One of the movies that rocked my world that I think lines up with this whole idea of like, of Satan and his presence in the new world, quote unquote, was called The Witch. Did y'all by any chance see that?
I don't think I did, but
it is, first of all, it's Don't Bring Your Children.
Everything you would expect it to be.
It doesn't sound
like a Disney movie.
No, not at all. It was a phenomenal horror film, but what it really painted a picture was the human psyche, and if we say something exists, maybe it really does exist, and it starts to take form either in your mind or outside of your mind. But witchcraft, which we're not going to dive into on this episode, but witchcraft was one of those things that the Puritans and other sects of Christianity pointed to as devil worship, right? Like they were the daughters of Satan. And if you want to watch a movie that really paints a picture of the different imageries associated with Satan and what that causes some people to do, that movie was, oh my God, excellent. I could only watch it once, though. I wouldn't watch it again. It was terrifying. I get scared really easy in movies, guys. But that's a good representation for this episode for sure. So, let's talk about Catholicism for a second, guys. Do you want to talk about it? You want to do a little bit of that?
I mean, before we do on the Puritans, I mean James, I think you'd be a good one to answer this, but having been going through that book by Brian Zahn, The Sinners in the Hands of a Loving God, and it's obviously against, you know, the Puritans, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, and I'm wondering with how they viewed God as being this angry being of fury pretty much, and Jesus basically being our lawyer and trying to save us from this horrible God-like person. Does that play into their view on Satan at all, do you think? Or is that kind of a coincidence?
So if you think that the being that is good, is love, is all of that, is trying to get you, like there's a description at one point in the Center of an Angry God sermon that's talking about people being dangled over fire, like spider webs, mm-hmm. like a spider dangling over fire, and basically, you know, just waiting to be dragged down. Like if you're viewing God as this incredibly violent, angry being, and he's the good guy. If you think there's a bad guy, how terrible does he have to be?
Right.
So I think that's,
I mean, because that sounds like Satan to me.
Right. So that's probably a big time where he went from being the fart joke guy in the background to being this really terrifying thing. I mean, a lot of those things lend to it, because you know everything about the faith that they had was about fear, every bit of it. And so, I mean, Satan's up being a manifestation of that fear.
It's just interesting because it, the way I would view a Satan creature is how they view God. And then they're constantly in fear of this God. And so, yeah, that's a good question. Like, how horrible must Satan be if God is this, what sounds like a monster?
I mean, when that sermon was first preached, apparently people were clinging onto their chairs in the pews, terrified that they were going to be dragged down into hell at any moment. Like, there was a physical fear that they were going to be dragged through the floor right then. They were screaming out repentance because they were so terrified. So,
and see that, and that's the Satan side of a story coming into effect, right? Like, it's not God that's dragging them down to hell. It's, they're afraid, obviously, of their sins, but they're like, who's dragging them down to hell? You know?
Right. So, yeah, I feel like a lot of that kind of view of God, of this kind of violent, retributive God that's going to, you know, like in the story in the Old Testament where, you know, God got mad at some people for questioning Moses, I think it was. Moses or Abraham, I can't remember right now. But it was Moses. Got mad. So God opened up the earth and swallowed thousands of them and then just closed the earth back up. Like, that kind of view of God lends to a really terrifying enemy.
And if you believe in a literal Old Testament, then that's a true story.
It almost sounds like their belief is like God and Satan almost working together, and God's like dangling these people over hell, and like Satan's jumping up trying to grab them a dog trying to get a bone. It's I don't know, and that's probably a horrible way of describing that, but that's kind of what it sounds like to me sometimes when you try to coincide this like monstrous God with a Satan character that's got to be even worse. Like,
it's just amazing to me that so if there is a Satan who's this thing that we should be scared of because he can basically trick anybody into going to hell and is the father of lies, is like everything terrible manifested, right? And is going to make us do terrible things as well. Why did Jesus not ever talk about him?
What? Talk about who?
Satan?
Right, like it seems like... I mean, we just talked about that.
So Satan is used in a couple parables.
Right.
And then there's the being tempted in the desert. But then at no point does he tell people, watch out for Satan or anything like that. He calls Peter Satan. Oh. But that's it. Like, he doesn't seem to be like, dude, y'all need to watch out though, because there's this Satan being that you really need to watch out for. Seems like, yeah. I don't know, seems like we would have some sort of warning, or he would have some level of responsibility to give a better warning. But that's...
Well, he didn't warn us about the gaze, did he?
He didn't. I mean,
and we
all know that's
painted,
the...
We painted that picture, so...
Yeah.
So going back to the Puritan...
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to derail...
You totally derailed us, but I love you anyway.
With your segue.
No, I liked it. Because we hit a little bit on fear, right? Put yourself in the minds of Puritans in the, what, I guess it would be the 1600s, probably around that time. They're in these dark, scary woods. They don't have electricity. They're in this foreign land where there's people who don't look like them that potentially paint themselves up. They don't have modern science, right? Like, they don't understand why diseases happen or why people have mental illness, etc. But when something bad happens, who are they blaming it on, right? Like, they either blame it on themselves or they blame it on Satan or on witches or on bad luck. Fear is festering in the existence of these folks in a way that I think, lends itself to kind of a spiritual representation. I mean, is that fair? I mean, going in the woods now as a little kid was scary, like growing up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't imagine being over there as adults trying to follow this God that you believe in and that you put all of your hope in, knowing that there's all of these adversaries that you're going to run into, and not really putting a face to that, not really painting a picture of what that is. It was a different time, for sure. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of scary things to be worried about. I mean, smallpox. So yeah, it was a different time. So real quick, I guess not real quick, but diving into Catholicism again, I did want to hit briefly on exorcisms. So Satan is believed to be real in the Catholic Church, no question. Also in many sects of Protestantism. I'm going to just throw out a couple stats. So in 2013, there's a poll by YouGov. 57% of people polled believe in the literal devil. 51% believe Satan has the power to possess. Also in 2013, the Vatican had a group of 250 priests that were strictly dedicated and trained to perform exorcisms. Exorcisms started kind of becoming a force, I guess, in the 1500s. They've happened in other religions as well.
And the Puritans were pretty big into exorcisms.
Yes, absolutely. They kind of ebbed and flow over the last couple of centuries, but lately, and you may have seen an article in the last month or two about this, there's been an increased need for priests that will perform exorcisms. And I found this other stat that there's at least 500 Protestant exorcism ministries in operation today in 2018. How about that? Crazy. 500 groups, man. Are these a bunch of charlatans? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. There's definitely people who believe that demon possession is absolutely real. It still happens. And they're there to perform exorcisms. Pretty freaking crazy. And then on the other side, there's sects of Christianity that believe it's more figurative when it comes to Satan or demons. So there's not a consensus across the board. But when 57% of the population, that wasn't just Christians, right? 57% of the population believe in a literal devil. Even if he doesn't exist, that's enough of a population to make him real.
Right.
Pretty wild.
It's hard, this idea of demon possession and stuff, because it just doesn't... It feels like we should have more video evidence that's like certifiable, or scientific evidence, you know, that kind of thing. If there's all these exorcisms happening, it seems like there should be just a more definitive proof. And so that, you know, makes me skeptical. But at the same time, I know my dad has even had a couple interesting interactions with that. I mean, there was once when we lived in Claremore that at one of the church camps, there was a kid who was basically acting like he couldn't go into like the sanctuary place in Falls Creek, and saying a lot of weird things and all kinds of stuff, and they prayed over him, and a bunch of crazy stuff happened during this process that, I mean, they would say was essentially an exorcism. That I don't know. I don't have a definitive way. You know, you can't prove a false thing. That's just not possible. But I don't know. I don't want to believe in it because it seems so fairy tale. But there's people that I know, love, and trust that have had interactions with stuff that it's hard to interact the other, or say the other way. You know, it's the same with divine intervention in different instances.
Right.
I mean, I know of enough stories of things that have happened that, like, I mean, it's this shouldn't have happened the way they did, and it seems like something else had to have happened. Something divine, yeah. Something of demonic possession or something.
There's a phenomenon to it that, for me, I like to use the word magic. It's enticing. Like, it's interesting to know that, like, we have this faith in God coming to earth, working through his son Jesus, being fully God and fully human, which in itself is magical. But to think that there's this other realm of beings that may or may not interact with the world that we see is very interesting to me as well. You know, I don't know. Like, when, for instance, when I was a sophomore, I was in Ireland on a mission trip for a month. Do you remember this story?
If it's the one of you praying over the houses, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it makes me happy at random times. It pops. There my was, head. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was this group. There were these group of Christians that I was working with that like spoke in tongues and were extremely spiritual and in ways that I didn't grow up in my tradition. Like we had holy water and we would have these really aggressive praying sessions where people are like sweating and stuff, and it freaked me out because I hadn't seen this or anything. We would go on prayer walks with holy water, and before we left, they told me about that less than a block away from our Christian coffee shop in Galway, there was this witch's lair, basically. And guys, I'm 16. I wouldn't care if I was 30. It would still freak me out, right? Like, I'm like, a witch's lair, whatever. So we actually walked down there and started praying as we passed. Well, at the time, I would wear like rubber bands around my wrist for some reason. And we also wore ball necklaces. Like,
yep,
we had a lot of interesting
fashion. I didn't choices, have them ever, but
yeah, but we stopped in front of this basically witch's shop, and while I was praying, I guess my rubber band got caught on like this iron rod or whatever outside of the door, but I didn't see it, right? So as I walk away, the rubber band snaps and hits me in the wrist. And I scream like a little girl because I feel like this witch is coming to get me, like, right then. And I'm like, ah!
And David, dude.
I was so scared. I was so scared, dude. Oh, man. And, like, you know, y'all may say, like, there's not a literal Satan, man, but there was something weird going on that day.
And it makes me laugh so hard, like, harder than other people who I've even told that story to, because I remember meeting up with you, like, right when you got back. We were in, like, we met up at, like, an Arby's, almost, like, just outside of Tulsa, and you were telling me, like, you still seemed like you were getting chills when you talked about it. Like, it was,
dude,
so intense.
It was
dude,
so scary. Oh,
so
yeah.
Funny. So,
oh, it was,
like,
terrifying.
Like, it was so funny, because when you told it, like, you were like, I mean, I know it was my rubber band, but it might have been a witch. Like, you still weren't sure. Oh, so funny. Oh, man.
Oh, Lord, dude. Oh, my gosh. Well, we're getting a little late. I guess we should kind of wrap up. So this last section that we kind of started was what gives Satan life, right? Like, is he present in popular culture would be one question. The answer is absolutely. Like, the movies list, in literature, in music, like, y'all are already probably thinking of something that you watched or saw in your formative years that had either representation of a demon possession or Satan. Like, for me, it was The Exorcist. Seeing that movie was terrifying.
Right, but I feel like, yeah, he's prevalent in, like, pop culture or whatever, but in the same way that Bigfoot is. People love, like, the movies and the shows about him, but do they think it's real?
Yeah, no, most people don't. But for some reason, Satan's different than that, man. Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's still being taught, like, at least the spiritual warfare aspect is still being taught. I know we just had a series in our fifth and sixth grade class we do about spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's still being taught. So, I mean, I would say that it's still real to a lot of people.
It's, and I get what you're saying, James, for sure. It's, if for some reason it's more palpable, like it's more, it's easier for, I think, the masses to, even if they don't, I don't know, say that they're a Christian or whatever, to believe into it's something that's causing all of this evil to happen on this earth. Like, when we boil it down, is that the reason that we possibly want this ultimate adversary to God to explain why there's so much evil and so much terribleness that happens on this earth? I don't know. It can help me sleep at night at times. You know, when I think about sex trafficking, when I think about demon possession, like, sure, a lot of people don't think that's real, and I can definitely see why they think that, but I've seen some weird stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. I can see why people don't think it's real and why people think it's real. I know enough to say I don't know. That's basically where I'm at on a lot of this stuff.
Which I think is about as humble of a position as you can take, is once you say, I don't know. Like, I think that's a very humble stance. Think of some of the news stories that you've seen of people doing sometimes superhuman things. And, you know, the guy down in Florida that ate that lady's face in a traffic jam or whatever, right?
The bath salts dude turns or out, somebody else?
Yeah. Turns out he was on bath salts. But yeah. I would have, if I didn't ever hear that it was bath salts, I would have probably at that point called that
right
demon possession. Now, I'm not saying that that's every time. But I can see how, you know, you could put that name to it as well. I mean, sounds like that right. drug is hell on earth, you know, like.
Yeah. But with kind of our main topic, though, of Satan, and I mean, I get that those tend to go hand in hand of the view that Satan's in charge of the demons and all of that. But I see some evidence for believing in demon possession, and it's definitely talked about biblically, but Satan seems to be a much fuzzier topic as being a being versus being a a state of mind or the idea of struggle, temptation, all of that, just having a singular term. You know, because we, in the English language, we like blanket term words like sin or love or anything that, you know, a lot of other languages have so many different words for. And I feel like that's what we've gotten into with the word Satan, is that there are so many different things throughout history that we have compiled into a single thing. And it's become this crazy being of power that's somehow in control of hell, even though it was supposed to be built to punish him. Somehow he gets his own place, he's in charge, and he's right. there, but he's not supposed to be there yet. He's supposed to be here, and then he can possess people, but he's somehow making everyone who ever does anything wrong do what they're doing wrong. It's just all really foggy of what Satan really even is in our definition.
Even modern Satanists don't believe in a literal Satan, which is interesting. There are some sects that do, but the more mainstream Satanists, if that you can even say that, really just, they basically live for themselves. Like, they don't, you know, they don't advocate for the golden rule. Like, they,
right, it's kind of,
they
it's
live
more the opposite of humanist kind of thing.
Yeah. And there's some overlap between humanist and Satanism, but it's basically self glorification, right? Doing whatever you have to do in order to be successful and to live the life that you want to live. Yeah, So, I don't know. Crazy episode, guys. Crazy episode.
Well, if we were going to wrap it up, I mean, if we were going to put a bow on it, what would you want to say as that finale, I guess?
I think regardless of whether or not Satan is an actual being or not, there is evil. There's evil in this world. I think we, as believers and non-believers, are tempted, whether or not it's some internal concept of humanity or literal demons or Satan. We're tempted to do what we want for ourselves at the expense of others. We're tempted to basically glorify ourselves no matter the cost. And I think that Satan has played a key role in history as being the scapegoat for that. And I don't know. I, as a Christian and as somebody that lives in the modern age, like, the idea of good versus evil is so prevalent in everything that I know. It's hard for me to see a world where there's a God that I believe in and there isn't some sort of adversary. You know, it makes a much more interesting story. Does that mean that it's real? I don't know. But it does add to a narrative. I mean, we didn't really talk about it, but like the C.S. Lewis story with The Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe, that entire series is about this Jesus character that's a lion that basically gives himself up as a ransom to this evil that's kind of representative of Satan in order to save us. And I think for that story, it kind of lines up. But I don't know, man. Pretty crazy. Hundreds of years of speculation, but it clearly, if 57% of the population on average believe in it, he is kind of real in some sense of the word. So
for anybody wanting to contact us, we have a Twitter. What's our Twitter, David?
You can look for Everything Is Okay Podcast. It's the actual handle is, let me pull it up.
While he's doing that, we are Everything Is Oklahoma on Facebook. And our website is everythingisokay.net.
Yes. So on Twitter, we're at EVRYTHNGSOK. So it's Everything's Okay. Yeah, and you can go to everythingisokay.net, and there's links to everything for us social media. So check it out, follow us, do what you need to do. We want to hear from you.
And please review us on iTunes or whatever medium you're listening to this through. Send us a comment, review. We're still looking for people who do the review and comment and stuff to send a couple shirts out that we've had made. So that's still open for anybody who does those. And anything else, Brad?
No, I think you got it, man. Okay, so with that, we'll go ahead and end it. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
Everything's okay, people.
Part of you, but what does a cover song and a bracelet prove? I know whose pocket you're sitting in. I know what makes you tick, what makes you sin. Thank you. from the cigarettes burning in your lungs. I am the drink that's on your tongue.